You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Casey Chaos, I mean, the name couldn't be any more fitting. When he's on the stage, I mean, he would jump up on the Marshall with a head and a cabinet, and the Marshall would be doing this.
Oh, my God. You know,
and Sonny be rocking. And then he'd jump off and fly into the drum set, and drums and fly. And Shannon's still crushing whatever's in front of him. And people are trying to put it back up, and they hit the drum in their face while they're trying to set it up. And then Casey would come over right after a setup and just grab the cymbal and throw it across the stage. Like, they just put that back.
You know? Oh, my God.
This is in front of fucking 80,000 people. In England, and I was sitting on stage like, these are my bros, you know. Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Hello once again, and welcome to 2020. My name's Corey Peza, here as always with Siobhan Cronin and Benny Goodman, who is holding up the new Lost Symphony Chapter 3 record, which if you have not checked out, you should do immediately.
LostSymphony.com. Go subscribe to all the good music too, because it's pretty ridiculous.
Absolutely. So
the artwork's amazing. So like, if you guys haven't seen the artwork, like, it's worth it to get it on vinyl, because not only is it signed, but like, the artwork is awesome. I have it framed on my wall.
Totally
yes.
agree.
Yes, definitely the way to go.
Should we just run in right into this, guys? Because like, we never even stopped.
I was just going to say, if you've watched the previous episode with Shannon Larkin, our guest host, and Mikey Doling of Snot Fame, Channel Zero, Soulfly, the conversation was so good, we just didn't stop. We just let it roll. Let it roll. So we're going to drop in to the middle of a conversation, and I hope it makes sense right here on 2020. Like, subscribe, do it.
2020-D.com.
Do you realize how many drummers copied Shannon back in the day in the late 90s?
Influence.
I'll tell you exactly how I found out. The day I found out, I was pacing around my backyard. Shannon was having some rain problems in Florida because he has quite an ecosystem going on, and he was lamenting, and I understand because there's a lot going on, but we're talking. And we're talking, and he's telling me I'm telling him how I think, wow, I saw Wrathchild, because I had never heard Wrathchild, and my drummer, Paul Lorenzo, said, oh, dude, I used to watch Headbangers Ball just for that shit. Those guys are so fucking awesome. You haven't seen them? Shit, fucking pull that stuff up on YouTube. And then sat me down, like the child that I am, and I just went like.
Yeah. You should have seen them live, dude.
And then I said to myself,
"Live was next level."
I called him back and I said, "Dude, you know who you remind me of? You remind me of like a young Vinnie Paul." And he goes, "Benny, let me tell you something about Vincent. There's a song called Ace of Spades by a band called Motorhead. And there was this band called Pantera opening for me. And we played this band called Motorhead for him. And Vincent came up to me and was like, what's that double bass thing that you just did?" And I showed him. And I was like, oh my God, Becoming, the song that made me think double bass was a thing beyond one. Like, that was the next iteration beyond one by Metallica. So you had Lars Ulrich, which we all know is just a joke by comparison.
No,
I'm sorry.
He's just lying.
I love Lars. He's the best. He wrote all the best songs. Yeah. But he's on great. Everything. But that said, there's another level, a new level. And it was Becoming for me. When I heard Becoming, I was like, what is he doing? Is it an overdub? I don't get. And Shannon was the guy that's like, hey, man, there's a band. There's this guy named Lemmy who plays a fucking bass through a Marshall. Maybe you should learn something.
The double bass thing was Lombardo to me. He was the guy.
Yeah, for sure. Pre-Pantera.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
For sure. Pre-Pantera, for sure.
The first time, every drummer in the country, every drummer in the world heard Angel of Death and went, oh, shit, time to hit the garage.
I mean, I was just a Slayer, Gene Hoagland back in the day. Was just crushing that shit, right?
Those death records?
Gene Hoagland. I can't say enough about that guy's
speech. Right. That dude was the one blowing everybody's head off for me.
His work in Death was amazing. The band Death from
Florida. Did he play with weights
Dark
on his
Angel?
Feet?
Yeah.
He played with weights on his feet. Dark Angel's drummer. Yeah, that was his. first band.
Let's not flip over Chuck Schuldiner, which a lot of, so first off, if you want to know what's metal, it's getting an MT2 Boss distortion pedal and plugging it directly into a board. And then playing death. That's the most metal thing I've ever heard in my entire life. And then Gene Holden playing drums behind that guy. And if you haven't heard death, go listen to it, be offended, and go, that's what you're talking about, and then realize it's genius.
I saw
it
probably five times back in the day. What was that like?
Come on, catharsis.
It was completely, I mean, mind-crushing, you know? I saw him with Hoagland. And then I forget the other drummer. I want to say it's Christie or what's his name?
Richard Christie. You mean the guy that's from Howard Stern that makes all the crane calls, but he's really the best drummer ever.
I believe he played in Death, right? Am I right about that?
Yeah, Richard Christie definitely played in Death, and he's definitely a hilarious jerky boy wannabe.
Right. I saw him with them too, and Hoagland as well. But Hoagland played in a million bands, right? With Strapping Young Lad, I mean, Testament.
I think even was in Fear Factory for a little bit or something, right? Wasn't he?
Yeah,
for a moment?
He was.
The biggest band was the cartoon band.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Metalocalypse?
Reds in that band. It's amazing.
Metalocalypse.
Well, that's the biggest extreme metal band I think in history is Metalocalypse, I believe.
Death Clock.
Death Clock.
That's it.
On the show Metalocalypse, yes.
It's like a history lesson for me.
Godsmack played, and it was us, then Megadeth, then Death Clock. And it was in California, and Klaus was there, Mikey.
Wow.
I got my picture with Gene that day, and you know, he's like 6'5", 6'6". He's a huge man. I'm like, hey, Gene, man. And he remembered me. He's like, hey, Shannon. And he's real mellow and cool and nice.
Way cool guy, yeah.
And then he's like, oh, you know, and he's like really sweet looking and everything. And then I go, take a picture with me. And then when I take the picture, I look at it later and he's like, and he looks at
I was going to in the 90s, I was talking about how everybody was stealing your shit back in the day because Shannon had moves. He had punch cymbals. He was swinging this way and that way. He did a stick where he would like the death holds, you know, I mean, so many moves. And then I'd look over and see the drummer for, everybody, right? Cold Chamber would be doing it, or Seven Dust would be doing it. Jamie Miller was doing it, you know.
Jamie's a different thing because, you know, me and Toomer were looking for a drummer because I was singing in the band,
right?
And we saw this band called Mary Suicide in Baltimore, Maryland, and Jamie Miller was a drummer. And you know, at the time, my band Ratchild was like the big metal band in Baltimore, Washington, and so we were scouring. Tim and
Mary
I were,
Suicide. That's right.
We were Mary Suicide, and so Tim and I were scouring the club. We that's how we found Jamie Miller. And so I personally wanted him to play like how I move. And showed him the fucking things, and
so you're like Obi-Wan Kenobi, and he was like Luke, and you're like, this is how you use your lightsaber.
100%. Yes,
Tony fucking Goodman, that's correct. And so he, you know,
or Yoda, let's go with Yoda, dude.
Yeah,
Jane is not that old. Come on.
Hey, let me get back to the first time you saw Mary Suicide, you accidentally walked in on that.
No. Me and Toomer were trolling the fucking clubs in Baltimore, Washington, looking for a drummer badass enough to play behind me, man. Because I was a drummer, you know, but I was going to sing in this band. I'm a pit bull, which ended up happening. And I found the great Jamie Miller, who, like I said, I just showed him, you know, the one, how I do this one little move. And he went from there. Like, same thing if, like, you know, Morgan Rose saw me in the 80s or whatever. These guys didn't, like, copy me. They were inspired and made their own fucking moves and started being showmen. Like, you know, when I first started doing this shit, you know, most drummers just sat and played, you know, like they won't, you know, drummers are made to be heard, not seen or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was a little punk that was like, fuck you. I want to be Angus Young on the drums or whatever.
Right.
And that's the thing. And so
which you were. Yeah.
So I think I inspired a bunch of drummers, but like, I never would say, you know, they ripped me off or anything.
No. I mean, Morgan Rose, dude, he's one of the best drummers in rock and roll, man, straight up. But he definitely was influenced you in the early years and is still to this day is carried into what he's doing now. But I mean,
Well, the funny part is now that I'm younger, right? So I didn't know Wrathchild. I grew up and I remember hearing Seven Dust on the Ozfest 97 Best Buy free single, right? You guys all remember that. What a fucking great tool. If you went to Ozfest, that you could go into Best Buy with your ticket and they'd send you this double CD. And I remember fucking hearing that and it blew my fucking mind. And that's how you actually found bands. Remember when they used to release actual promotional singles and that's how you discover stuff? But that's how I heard Seven Dust, was they put Black on there. And I remember going and seeing them with Snot, November 27th, 1997. And I remember thinking to myself that Morgan Rose was one of the fucking sickest drummers 100%. I had ever seen. 100%. Because he was just like fucking Spinal Tap. He was like the Spinal Tap where it was like Animal. And I'd never seen that yet.
There we go again. Yeah. But you know where he got that from.
But and that's the thing. Thank you, Mikey. Because, you know, if you're me, see, what happened was also, all these cats like made it before me that I influenced, right? And so what happened then is they started inspiring and influencing all these younger drummers, which are like second generation Larkin. Really.
Well, you're like the OG player.
I'm just saying. Well,
hey, any one of these drummers will admit it too. You talk to him, you say Shannon Larkin, like, oh yeah.
Well, no, but hold on. But David Abruzzese schooled us because when we had David on the show, when we invited Shannon on to be with to do the David thing, I thought David was like the senior in the sense that but he was like, no, dude. Wrathchild. I remember seeing them in the '80s and being like, you guys were the fucking best. And blah, blah, blah. And then he goes into Pearl Jam and sells millions of records. But I thought it was gonna be, yes, younger son, blah 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 blah. And I was schooled that like even David was like, oh no, dude. No.
Absolutely.
The mighty Shannon Larkin. Shannon Larkin, I salute you. Yeah. And that's literally, I think he said that exactly, was Shannon Larkin, I salute you.
Yeah.
So you were Angus Young on the drums, because he did salute you.
It's true.
We've exhausted Shannon.
Yeah, kind of. He's like, move on.
Let's talk about Mikey Doling more.
Oh shit!
Why don't you ask a question, co-host?
Hey, Shannon.
I got Shannon, a question.
What is it?
So is the new shows that you're going to be doing in Belgium, is there a new record coming out, or are you supporting Feed Them with a Brick or what?
Well, we had another record come out since Feed Them with a Brick called Exit Humanity, which we've already
which I have that. I wasn't sure the order of them.
Yeah, you have that album.
I have Exit Humanity, but I have the
I send it to you, or did you go online and get that
vinyl that you sent me? But I also I also support my friends, and I buy.
I love that. I have that. Dave Fortman mixed that record, by the way.
It sounds amazing.
Dude. Yeah, yeah.
Seven on the drums. Yeah, he's amazing.
Yes, he's on that one. Yes. Mm-hmm. And Roy Mayorga's on the one before, Kill All Kings, which I don't know if you have that one.
I have that one.
Oh, do you? Yeah, that one too. Okay, cool. No, but we're going, it's more like we're not supporting anything new. It's just like COVID's over. Let's play some festivals, you know? Yeah. And actually, this is pretty cool. In Belgium, the official day that they're letting festivals happen again with no separation of 6 feet and masks and all that, because we're actually doing two festivals where they still got to wear masks and they put 10 people in clusters on a field. 2,000 people separated by 10 at a time. Think about that festival. It's really weird, like looking out there. People are like in these little gates.
Yeah.
It's going to be so bizarre. But we're doing two of those like in 2 weeks or something from now.
This but one then, goes out to Lysol.
But then August 13th, we're playing the first festival where there's no bar or no holds barred. Go out there. It's 20,000 people. It's Alcatraz. We're playing with Testament and a few other big bands. It's going to be cool.
It's going to be crazy.
Yeah, it's going to be absolutely nuts. And we actually asked the promoter, because we're headlining the big tent. We go on like 11:30 or 11, something like that, which the tent like holds 5,000 people. You know those tents at festivals. We're headlining that thing. We got full production with fire and the whole nine yards. But we asked, we're like, look, what time is the first band on? And they're all, yeah, I think it's at 2 p.m. We're like, can we go on before them? They're like, what? We want to go on twice a day. We want to open. We want to be the first band to go on since COVID in front of a crowd that doesn't have to be segregated or whatever. God. You know, there's something else that that's pretty cool. It's my other band, Wyote, which it's my like passion project. Like I've written some fucking songs with that band.
Yeah, we're doing fucking heavy, good stuff. Like that again, lots of melody.
There's a lot of melody in it.
Really, really deep. Great stuff, Mikey. Great stuff. And let me say this: as a new Benny Goodman, Mikey turned me on to Wyote with these killer videos, right? And I'm like, dude.
Oh yeah, the lyric videos.
So he fucking hooks me up. So all five of those videos that we made for the apocalypse were all done by David Proven, his guy.
No drugs required, by the way. Yeah. No drugs required. Just watch them sober, and you'll still think the flashbacks.
He's so good. David's the shit. Amazing.
Like one of Mikey's Wyote videos, it's just so cool. He did the Shogun Warrior thing, and it looks, and the way, like you tell him, you know, just give him like some clues, like a black.
Or David.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he goes, man. So I always thank Mikey for that too, man.
Reason I brought up Wyote, if it's okay if I continue.
Yeah, go.
It's because Wyote's playing our first show we've ever on September 4th in Belgium. We're doing a festival out there.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so I'm pretty excited about it. So I'm doing double duty. I'm doing Channel Zero, and then I got two Wyote festivals or Wyote shows.
Just for anyone that's listening, where can people find the Wyote stuff?
Okay. We haven't released anything yet because, and there's a reason why, in the beginning we had a different singer, and that's what you saw, Shannon, with those lyric videos. But since then we replaced our singer because unfortunately we started doing rehearsals and you couldn't really pull it live. So we had to replace him. So I called Aaron Nordstrom from Gemini Syndrome.
Oh, yeah, I know Aaron.
My boy, I produced their first record, Gemini Syndrome's first record, that got them signed to Warner. And we're friends ever since that. So I asked him to do this with me as a side project for him, because, of course, he's busy with Gemini. That band is full on right now. But we got in the studio together with Chris Collier, who's producing like the new Korn stuff, Prong, Doug Penick stuff. Anyway, we got together, and those are the songs I sent you, Shannon, that we did.
Amazing. And I made it work.
Thank you. But we can't release anything until Gemini Syndrome is done with their record cycle right now. They're dropping singles on their new album right now, and their management asked me to just hold back. We can play live shows. We can't put anything online. So those songs actually are not going to be released. Could be a year.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm just going to go out and play live shows and have a great time. He said, that's fine. I asked him, I said, well, it might get on YouTube. He said, that's cool. As long as you're not out there pushing singles and shit, you know? So that's my answer. If you ask where they can get music, you can't get it right now. So I'm sitting on it.
They'll have to stay tuned. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got some on my phone along with some of Kirk Hammett's riffs that he didn't put to the cloud when he lost it in Hawaii going around, because apparently that's where how Metallica didn't get their record was, you know, Kirk Hammett broke his phone. But I do have some Wyote on my phone, and I'll tell you,
I've given it to some friends just on the promise.
I'm a friend. Oh, man. Yeah. He said it. You guys heard it. You all heard it.
You know, Shannon's the first one who got those.
Yeah. I felt so honored too. I love that. I still do. And Mikey's the first person that I sent shit to on the new Apocalypse demos.
Yeah.
It's out that fucking on my last record, The Shape Blues to Come. Because and Mikey's one of the only dudes that got the reference, you know, too, of that record title.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep. And that's why I bought the damn vinyl as soon as it was available. I'm like, I want to try to be the first guy. So I bought it. I don't even know, you know.
Well, I love the fact that you guys are showing the camaraderie in like the music industry, because like obviously so many people are used to like, you know, bands, you know, a lot of the time we'll put down other bands like to see bands lifting each other up, especially after COVID too, because that, if anything that COVID did for me, it just makes me like, I'm so excited for any success for bands. Like where I used to be like, oh, fuck that guy. He sucks. I'm like, oh no, good for you, man. Good for you. Play your shitty covers with your shitty fucking cover band. Like, but you're making money and you're doing what you love. And like, I'm proud of you. Like, that's how I feel now, because like, if this has taught us anything, stop being petty and just support your friends and support music, because it's fucking better than 99.9% of everything else.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, really. Yeah. It seems like, especially with you guys, you know, because you've been doing it for so long and you're in that club, it seems like a pretty small club of musicians that have really stood the test of time. And
it's been a long roll. Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not an easy career to make last. So,
well, Shannon came right out of high school, even before he graduated, he was touring in a freaking car.
Yeah.
Like when he was like 15 or 14 or something. Right, Shannon?
True. It's true. Yeah. I got lucky, you know.
Here you're in your 50s. I mean,
I landed, you know, from Rothschild America, where this dude Sully Erna came to see us play in North Carolina with Reed, the drummer from Corrosion of Conformity.
God rest his soul, man.
Yeah.
Icon.
Fucking icon, hero of mine.
Yeah, and absolutely.
And then his friend Todd. But that night, and then we just hit it off. And, you know,
wow.
Years later, I got lucky, you know, because I joined this tank that, you know, has just for 18 years now just kept being successful, you know, and so it's enabled me, you know, to be able to still do things like MF people, back alligators, fucking, you know,
funky back alligators, dude, mad dog.
Yeah, you know, funky ants. And I've always, you know, Mike.
Oh, that's right, the ants, dude. Yeah.
I've always had that
with
shit.
With Shane.
And on the side, that's how it's always, you know, but I'll say this, it's so hard. And when you do get in a band like Godsmack, you're so grateful to the universe. Right. I mean, you know, words can't describe it, but also how we talk about the pettiness of like other bands and blah, 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 and shit like that. It's, you guys got to understand, Mikey and I are like true friends. Like, you know, we're not just
before
like,
the music, like besides the music, we're brothers. Yeah, for sure.
Thing is, it's because of our history together, and I lived for 10 years in the same town as him, so you know we came up together kind of, and like, you know, so it's different if you like have a friend that's a friend, a good friend, like the Seven Dust dudes to me. I'll call Lejean sometime, maybe once, I don't know if I'm somewhere I'm reminded of him, it might be 2 years before I call Morgan Rose, say, hey dude, how are you, or whatever. Or Morgan called me a couple months ago, just out of the blue. Hey man, I got this new single out, or whatever it was. But they're friends. But I wanted to stress, you know, Mike and I are friends.
Yeah. Like
it's old school, man. Yeah, brother, for sure.
There's a difference. Therefore, you know, we know, like, he doesn't, I like what he does. He likes what I do. But there'd never be a moment where I'd have to say, yeah, I'm not really into that, bro. Because we're too much the same musically and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And all we used to do was like listen to music. That's, you know, and drink.
Dude,
but
mid-90s, man. That apartment with that 6'4" and Paula and Wit was living up in the here's your neighbor and Klaus.
The snot tree. House, dude. The snot house.
The snot house. Oh my god.
It was a party. It was the 90s. It was great, man. I mean, like, party.
Yes, we did. How about this? We had the snot house, right? All the guys in snot lived together in one house.
Yes.
Okay. And we rehearsed next to the local strip club next door. So we'd be jamming in the day, take a break and go into the strip club, pull the strippers out. Oh yeah, they'd be wanting to hang out with us because we're snot. And they'd come and watch us jam, and then we'd take them back to our apartment, or not apartment, house, to the snot house, and they would buy us all groceries and You know, they had money, we didn't. And then, yeah. And then we,
the irony.
That's well, such the cliche. Such a... The strippers paying your bills. That's
really smart. I mean, because you want to know what? Strippers have such disposable incomes. Like, if there's anything I've ever noticed from strippers, they're like, oh, I'm like, when they go out with their friends, they buy the expensive bottle of Moet. They go out for dinner. And you're like, how do you get this? Like, oh, this is just like one night. You're like, really? So good for you guys for making use of that.
I Moet back then. I was more like, let's get a bottle of Jack.
Tell the strippers what to buy.
But then anyway, so then, yeah. And then we had this house, the strip club, the local place, Toast Tavern, where we could sell it out at any time we play it. And then Shannon living up the street and Klaus and Dave. And at that time, it was so fucking fun, man. 94, 95.
Tight scene, man. It was a state. Street, man, we owned State Street. It was a very tight scene, and I remember the first time I ever went, Whitfield Crane took me to the Snot House, and it was broad daylight, big like keg in the backyard party, you know.
Yeah, of course, always
all the people there, and it was the first time I met Lynn Strait, and it was a perfect for me meeting Lynn for the first time because I happen to have a Bad Brain shirt on, so I immediately he liked me right away because of that.
Yeah.
Well, sure, you know, so I was in.
Yeah, and not only that, I think it was one of the first times I ever saw a dude with tattoos on his head. Shannon's got a hat and hair right now, but he has tattoos on both sides of his head. You know, and I just kept looking at that like, that's the coolest shit I've ever seen. Like, not only does he rip on the drums and I'm totally like man-crushing drum-wise now, he's got fucking tattoos on his head. And we're a Snot, you know, we thought we were hard, you know?
Yeah.
It was cool, man.
Oh, my gosh. Definitely. One thing I have to say that I love about both of you, and I've only gotten to know you a little bit, is you're both so authentic and you have such great stories. And I really admire that. I feel like from beginning to end, you've always just done it and, like, gone out and done what feels right and intuitive. And obviously you've come together as friends, and it's not a surprise because I feel like you both have that similar spirit. And that's so amazing to, like, see this, the longevity of your friendship and all these overlaps. And I feel like there is this ebb and flow in the music industry where the people of a similar spirit eventually come together, you know? So it's really
weird.
Cool
like
to
we've
see
been
that.
In different bands forever, but it almost feels like we're in one big band, like with him and the Tumor and Jamie and Sonny and the guys in UKJ. We just felt like we're like one big band, even though we weren't. I don't know. We really loved each other like that.
You and Soulfly, you know, like he gets in a band with Roy Mayorga, who was Amen Sound Man. We're all one big. The scene was so tight. Like System of a Down used to open for Snot. I mean, it's a scene, man.
Yeah, definitely. It felt like that. And when we see each other or talk, like even now, I didn't even call Shannon before this interview.
By the way, I put smiley face and heart back because I was still out finishing. I finished feeding my fish, so I only have my Apple Watch thing. So I just.
Oh, okay. Smiley. Because yeah. I didn't want to like burn that card of when we first saw each other. Like, hey, dude, you know, I wanted to be authentic instead of talking for like, what are we going to talk about, dude?
Right.
No, I wanted to be like this, that. You know,
spontaneous.
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
So it's you guys had, you know, in the mid 90s, like this just crazy party scene. You know, in the following years, were there any like good stories where you guys maybe ran into each other after some time on tour?
I ran into Shannon in England when we played Ozfest at Milton Keynes, and he was in Amen, and I was in Soulfly. That was pretty fucking epic. We crushed 80,000 people right before Slipknot, which was nuts. And then I went over to the second stage, which is a huge stage, and Amen put on this performance that was just outright dangerous. Like, it was insane. It was dangerous.
Can you describe how is it dangerous?
Well, Casey's like
cymbal stands in the crowd with cymbals on them. I mean, people hurt,
right.
You know?
Right,
people got like, hurt, man.
Oh, for sure. Casey Chaos. I mean, the name couldn't be any more fitting. When he's on the stage, I mean, he would jump up on the Marshall with a head and a cabinet, and the Marshall would be doing this.
Oh my
god!
You know,
and Sonny be rocking, And then he'd jump off and fly into the drum set, and drums would fly, and Shannon's still crushing whatever's in front of him. And people were trying to put it back up, and they'd hit the drum in their face while they're trying to set it up. And then Casey would come over right after a setup and just grab the cymbal and throw it across the stage. Like, they just put that back. You
know? Oh, fucking my God.
Badass. This is in front of fucking 80,000 people. In England. And I was sitting on stage like, these are my bros. You know? Yeah. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah. And ironically, you know, Toomer and Sonny from Snot were in Amen after tragedy. Right.
So my brothers were playing with my brother Shannon and his brothers and me. And then we sat on the second stage after they closed it down. Remember that? And watched Black Sabbath together.
Yes.
First time Ozzy had been there in 25 years or something with Sabbath. Wow. We watched that.
Damn.
Yes, we did. And Tool, I think, played.
Yeah, Tool played too at Slipknot.
And yeah.
And
I'll never forget that Tool, because it happens, but Danny Carey made a mistake and got all out of time in, what the fuck song was it? But anyway, and then they actually went, if that happens in a band like Tool, well, it's a train wreck. You have to stop. You can't, there's no way. Usually, like in a blues band, somebody gets off, you can look at each other or even metal and get back without having to stop. In Tool, if you fucking get off, you got to stop. So they all stopped, and Keenan goes, we're real fucking professional. I was like, what a dick to say that, because his band, you know.
Call his boy out like that. That's not cool. I get it.
Anyway. Yeah,
I remember, though, just sitting on that second stage. We kind of, it turned into something for the bands to be able to watch the show, right? Is that right? We're sitting up there, like, me and you and Sonny and Toomer, kind of just all arm in arm, like, watching Black Sabbath perform in England. First time in 25 years with Ozzy. I just remember that moment, like, burn that into my brain right now, because this is a moment, like, probably the greatest rock and roll moment of my life. One of them.
Rock and roll history. We were a part of it.
Can I tell you that under strange happenstance, I watched Black Sabbath with Ozzy for the first time with one of your friends, John Dolyman.
Oh yeah,
like drummer from System of a Down. Uh-huh. So I remember being backstage at the show because I was working for a magazine, and I saw my friend Nicole backstage, and she got backstage because she took a hat from a drummer.
Oh, okay.
And later she comes out with this dude, and I'm like, wait, I think I recognize this guy, and it's John from System of a Down and Surge, and we literally watched Sabbath for the first time at the at Great Woods in Mansfield, Mass, with John and Serge.
Cool.
And I have pictures of my brother with John. Like, and John looks like he's like literally super young because it's way back in the day. Yeah, but I just remember thinking to myself, like, because we didn't internalize it now, but now you think about a band like System of a Down, who's like a legendary band. But it's like when I saw Black Sabbath with Ozzy for the first time on this exact same tour you're talking about, like. I saw that.
Can I tie the story into something else that's awesome?
Absolutely.
Shannon, when you played with, was it Ozzy or Black Sabbath? I forget. The Cheetah. Both. Okay, that's what I meant.
Rockstar.
Can we talk about that? Because who can say that they played with Black Sabbath? You know, played drums for Black Sabbath. That's just
Shannon insane. Osborne might not agree.
Well,
she might say it never happened and just erase the tape.
We don't need that, but Shannon,
no, you know, I actually told that story on this show, this very podcast, but in a nutshell, you know, through Whit Crane, I Robert Trujillo would see me play with the Back Alligators of all bands, but that was enough to make him tell Sharon Osbourne I can replace Mike Borden with this guy for a one-off.
Right.
And so, you know, because he played for Ozzy, and so it was because Bill Ward was still, you know, too fat to play or Sabbath on their reunion, you know, and so they got Michael Borden, and so it was 98, and so I got the call, Sharon Osbourne, like, yeah, right, she's like, no, it's Sharon, and then I knew it was, And
that's so badass, man. My God.
You know? To this day, it's like, I love the look on your face. It's so authentic. It's like, no matter how cool things are, Sharon Osbourne calling saying, hey, do you want to fill in for this band called Black Sabbath? Because Bill's too fat.
Come on.
It was just, the dream.
But hold on. But did you say you played with Ozzy too? Because I love Sabbath, but I got to tell you again, just like Van Hagar, I liked Ozzy solo Blizzard of Oz era for me, the Randy Rhoads stuff. I understand Tony Iommi was the father, Riffmaster and Heavy and Geezer Butler. And I get it.
Here we
but
go.
Like Mr. Crowley and Over the Mountain.
Resident musicologist I don't of rock know, history.
And You Can't Kill Rock and Roll, the Lee Kerslake stuff. Later, Tommy Aldridge. Bro, that was for me. So how about playing Sabbath. Those songs, dude? Like Mr. Crowley and Crazy Train. Was that Ozzy Osbourne or was that Joe Holmes at that point?
Well, it was.
I mean, excuse me, Zach or Joe?
It was Joe, Smoking Joe Holmes.
And what was that like playing with him?
I love Joe, man. Spirit guy.
He was so amazing. And Robert Trujillo, it was a great band.
He got overlooked a lot, I feel like, now in the history because people don't remember Joe Holmes. But when I saw Ozzy for the first time, it was because Mike Borden and it was Joe Holmes.
Ozzy'd make a record, he'd get scared and say, I need Zach or else I won't be successful. But first, let me go back to the Randy Rhoads thing. And so Randy Rhoads, was a gift from God to us. And so that's what all of a sudden Ozzy's solo work was completely different from Black Sabbath, yet it was still Ozzy, his voice, the voice of Black Sabbath, even though Ronnie James Dio's record was awesome, right? But so
Dio was the GOAT, man.
So I understand what you're saying about, it's not Tony Iommi or whatever, but Randy Rhoads was something as special as Tony Iommi, just in a different way, Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, those are both influential in completely, completely different way. I mean, look, Tony Iommi, you can say the Kinks and all those bands made the heavy sound, but Tony Iommi, for me and for so many people, like, was the sound of heavy. You know what I mean? Like Steppenwolf said heavy metal, in a song, but it was Tony Iommi.
Heavy metal thunder.
But then, that's 1968 with Steppenwolf. But then you have like Tony Iommi and he made it. But then Randy Rhoads, I felt like other than, obviously Eddie Van Halen was doing the super virtuoso crazy stuff in a really cool way. But Randy did the virtuoso stuff, but in a virtuoso way that wasn't wanky. It was very classical. And it was like almost like if Beethoven came back to life and said, hey, Ozzy Osbourne, do you want to remake that career and make something that's even more technically proficient than what Tony Iommi does? And that's what Blizzard of Oz was. And then we lost Randy. So it's now legendary. Just because of the fact that what could have been, we just don't know.
Well, we got Diary of a Madman also.
Well, it came out in the same sessions, right? It wasn't that like the same. It was Blizzard of Oz and Diary of a Madman were pretty much like made within months of each other, right?
Yes.
I don't know, but it sounds about right. Yeah.
Ask Max Norman, he'll tell you.
No, that's correct. And that's why those records are so magic. Both of them are as good as the net. Sometimes it's
absolutely
isn't quite as good. Well, Diary was better. The song Diary of a Madman. I mean,
hey guys, hold on one sec, okay? Go ahead and keep one sec.
Well, dude, Diary of a Madman is one of the greatest Randy Rhoads riffs of all time.
It's like classical music, kind of. I mean, you have Lost Symphony. That's more like classical music, but it reminds me of classical music when I hear Diary of a Madman. It's so symphonic sounding.
I have to go back and learn some more. I learned one Randy Rhoads solo, but I got to go back and learn all.
Well, we
got
to go back and have you do Carl Orff before, because that's what he used to come out to was Carmina Burana. Yeah. And the Ozzy came out to has always come out to that. So that's when he would come out. Because we're doing Over the Mountain. We did Over the Mountain, by the way, Shannon. And I said to her, because she was like, well, how can we make this more classical? I'm like, well, if you want to make it like a real Ozzy fan, anyone who listened to bootlegs of Randy Rhoads, because there's no live version of Over the Mountain available, listen to it. It was always track number one on the bootleg, and he'd come out to Carmina Burana. So I said, if we were going to do a cover of Over the Mountain and we had a violinist, we just had to have her cover Carl Orff, because it just sounds like it's the right thing to do if you're going to be doing Randy Rhoads, because that's what Randy would have come out to.
Nice.
Right? Well, am I right?
Yeah.
Funny story. So when I played for Ozzy Osbourne, which was the same day opening for Black Sabbath, but so I, went in the Ozzy Osbourne, there was an Ozzy Osbourne dressing room where Robert, Joe, me, and Ozzy were before the Ozzy. And then there was, of course, the Black Sabbath dressing room where me, Ozzy, and Tony were, right?
Say hi to Shannon.
So in the in the Ozzy dressing room, I dressed in white for the Ozzy gig, you know, and then when I went to Black Sabbath, I dressed in all black. But what was my point? I had a reason for saying
it. Doesn't matter if you're black or white.
Ben was saying how they would come out to Carl Orff. That did that spark a memory starting the Ozzy show?
Yes.
Randy Rhodes.
Didn't spark it so hard that I remember.
Diary of a Madman.
But it's
playing with Ozzy.
The sentence started, well, when I was playing with Ozzy Osbourne. So anything you said after that was pretty great, no matter what.
It works.
You walked into his dressing room, and you were looking at him as he was looking at you.
Oh, well, I can say this funny story. So he said, you know, and it was before we went on the Ozzy show, and he looked at me, and I was all dressed in fucking white beard, white shorts, you know, like Chucks. And he's like, you look good, no eyeliner. And I go, yeah, no, I didn't wear any eyeliner. Right? He's got ass eyeliner. He goes, well, you know why I use the eyeliner? Because after the 10th row, no one can really see your eyes without it. But with the thick eyeliner on, 50 rows back, it looks, they could see.
It's true. Wow.
And I never forgot that. And I always, it became a habit to put eyeliner on before we go on stage. Any band I'm in, it's just because Ozzy told me that.
Because Ozzy, yeah. Okay.
Wow.
I'd take that advice.
I used to wear eyeliner because I thought chicks made me think it was like vampire-like and made me hotter. So it'd be like, but I'm in a band.
That's true, too. That works,
too. Okay.
Hey, Shannon.
Siobhan's like, no, that doesn't work in Miami.
Shannon, remember that Les Paul that I had? That I did the old Les Paul, the early snot. Remember that? Yeah, I thought I'd break it out for you.
Yeah.
There it is.
Oh, wow.
That's the one, Shannon. The same one, brother. Yeah.
We get the full story on that one on your last episode, Mike.
Correct. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was amazing. Go check out Mikey Dolan.
Such a good story of that guitar.
Talking about Wyote and Channel Zero.
That's the one.
And snot.
Yeah. That's the one they recorded the album with. Yeah. Get some. Yeah.
That sat at a club or a bar or something like that, right? On the beach?
Yeah, well, yeah. It's
right,
sat,
and then you got it back.
Yeah, remember Velvet Jones, Shannon?
Of course.
And Craig, the owner. Well, yeah. after I beat the shit out of the guitar on stage, it was unplayable. It was just, neck was like this way, and just, it was just destroyed from beer and blood, and, you know, torn it across the stage. That's Sonny.
Nothing like a classical music concert.
not a bad throw, just like, hey bro, you know. Craig put it on the wall at Velvet Jones for 17 years. It sat up there, and I would go in there and drink or whatever, and I'd see it up on the wall. Hey, there it is, unplayable Les Paul that I had so much great times with. And then of course it sat there through all those other bands coming through there. Well, when Velvet Jones closed, I don't know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Craig called me and said, hey, man, we got to have dinner together. I didn't even think about the guitar or nothing. I'm sure. So I went to Santa Barbara, had sushi with him. And he's like, hey, man, I got something in the car for you. And we went out to the car and he broke a case out. And this was in it, fully refurbished and redone.
What a champion. Wow.
Dude, right? Dude, it was unplayable piece of garbage wood. It was firewood. And he had it completely rebuilt and fucking like new for me, dude, and gave it to me.
Wow.
That's epic, right?
So yeah, are you still using that one on stage?
No, one's kind of retired, you know. Yeah. It's in the case in the house. If Snot for some reason was ever to get on stage again, somehow I would break this guitar out and play it.
Yeah,
for
that's
sure.
Awesome.
Absolutely. That's Snot guitar.
Maybe you can get the hologram of Ronnie James Dio to come out as a hologram of Lynn Strait.
Oh, well, that would be
awful. Tupac Shakur could be hanging out backstage.
That'd be cool.
You get Bonnaroo. Remember that, guys? Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah, but Shannon, right? Craig, the man.
Man, that's unbelievable. Above and beyond. That's what that's called.
Right. It really is. I, dude, when he broke it out, I opened it. I was like, dude, I couldn't help it. Tears came out of my eyes.
I would have cried like a bitch right there, for sure.
I did, man. Yeah. So, you know, and they took a picture of me. I'm like looking up.
Wasn't that a song that you did or something like that, Shannon?
Crying like a bitch?
Crying like a bitch?
I gave Sully that title. He ran with the Nikki Sixx thing or whatever, but I gave him the title of it.
So that's actually the way that you just used it was because it's normally in your vernacular. And now it's a number one. It was a number one single, probably, because all your songs are like number one.
Is Mikey waiting on dinner?
It was the number one.
My wife's over here cooking. Yeah. Can you hear it?
No.
Yeah. Dude, good for no. Listen, my fiance just gave me, like, in Tupperware. I was like, babe, could, like, she's like, it's already ready. I already knew you were going to miss out on me.
What are you making there, babe? Dude, steak and broccoli.
Isn't this awesome? Good for, dude, that sounds delicious.
Yeah.
I'm getting with,
This is how he builds all the muscle, man.
Yeah, Mexican.
Honestly, like, congratulations, because so many people, you know, I know you said when you were on our show that you got, like, the COVID fat. And
oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, dude, so, like, I'm just telling you, like, so when I sent you Chapter 3, our record, which if you guys, again, have
which
not
is amazing.
Got, I sent him, like, the download link for Chapter 3, and we'll send you guys the full vinyl so you can enjoy all the artwork and stuff. But, like, you called me from the bike, dude. You're like, who the fuck is playing on this? And I'm like,
yeah, Marty Freeman.
I'm like, it's Marty Freeman. But here's the thing is, it's not just Marty. It's Joey Concepcion. It's Jimmy Bell. Like, David Ellison played on
it. Who's the guitar player you were telling me about? The best
guitarist.
Jimmy
Bell. Jimmy Bell. The best. Okay, so they're the best picker in my mind, like, on the planet, as far as it just sounds like he's trying to murder the pick even more than Yngwie. He's a guy named Jimmy Bell.
Yeah.
Like, he was runner up to Ozzy Osbourne, to Zakk Wylde, excuse me, in the 80s. And the reason he didn't get it supposedly was, like, some, you know, personal things. But he played with, like, Joan Jett for a while. He was in that movie with Michael J. Fox and Joan Jett. But he now plays for Autograph, okay? But he's like, I don't want to say he's the Randy Rhoads for Autograph because I don't want him to die, okay? But he's, like, the best thing that could have ever happened to any band because he does a guitar solo, but he's a lefty, okay? And he always complains that, like, he can't do the sweep picking. He can't
He's a lefty?
But he doesn't need to because he literally plays, like, and I'm not throwing my boy Rusty Cooley under the bus, but if Rusty Cooley played, like, Brian Setzer. That's he plays like these like completely like Brian Setzer like old school Les Paul style.
The percussive picking is
dude, if you want to freak your fucking, if you want to say to yourself, I've never ever seen someone pick like this, go look up J-I-M-I space Bell. Listen to him on our record. You'll hear him just by his picking. Just by his picking. You hear the crazy picking, the ferocious picking. You'll go, that's Jimmy Bell, and he's playing it left-handed, and there's no cheating. Yeah. It's just him doing takes. And he'll call us afterwards, Benny, are you sure you got it? Meanwhile, Corey's like, I don't know which one to use. They're all fucking ridiculous.
You got 15 amazing takes.
Right. How do you choose?
That's cool.
But yeah. Listen, I know you. Well, go ahead. I don't want to interrupt.
I was going to say, I think I got to cut it a little bit, guys. And please, I wanted to give some love to Shannon. Like, man, I'm so glad we got to do this together,
bro.
We got a very long friendship, man. And every time I see you, it's just like I saw you yesterday. And I'm just really happy to be able to share this. It's cool.
I love you, my man. I do.
Me too.
I miss you too.
And we appreciate you guys coming on.
Dude, we love this.
This is
so cool
to observe.
It's just, cool. I just want to, like, breathe it in because you guys are so genuine. And it was fun because, like, we could genuinely say we brought our friends together. And I learn stuff every single time because you know what, I call myself a defender of the faith and I throw around a lot of, like, semi-true facts, but it's always really nice to hear people who are really there, and you guys set the record straight, like, hey, no, this is how it happened. And I also appreciate you guys being so candid because, you know, look, it's a hard thing, and I appreciate, thank you for telling us and also sharing. Let's take a moment to share in the memory that was Ollie Herbert and the memory that was Lynn Strait and all our friends that we've lost.
All so thanks to all those great guys. Heroes, man. Yeah, for sure, bro. Got you. Ooy. Respect. Okay, dudes. Yeah.
Best go have some amazing steak and broccoli.
Guys.
Okay, much love to you guys.
Shannon, you're on notice, bro. We better be jamming soon, man.
Yes, we will. We will. I
promise. I want to see that.
Hell yeah. It's going to be...
Shannon, the buzz has started, my friend. The buzz has started.
Stay tuned to 2020 for the updates.
Just don't give him a mic, Shannon.
Oh, my God.
Thank you for checking out this episode of 2020. Please visit 2020-D.com. Like and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes. This week's throwback clip is from episode number 39, also featuring Shannon Larkin. Check it out.
You know, I was like, I stroked out in my late 40s from all the fucking headbanging and shit. And I mean, literally had a stroke and was in the hospital.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
I did. And so, and my doctors were like, you can't bang your head anymore like that and whatever, you know.
You rocked way too hard, man. That's-
I was trying to, you know, put like sunglasses on stage because I'd just forget and start banging
sure,
my head.
Sure, yeah, yeah. It's like muscle memory, of course. Yeah.
Well, I still do, by the way. And it turned out that I got a heart surgery. I had a hole in my heart. And that was allowing these blood clots to slip through. And then when a blood clot slips through and goes to your brain, like typically it goes through the four parts of your heart and it just dissipates the blood clot so that it doesn't go and hit your brain. If the blood clot gets through and hits your brain, it makes a stroke. Pow! So, you know, I was in my kitchen, bang! It's like, I thought it was home intrusion or something, you know? All of a sudden I felt like hit. Well, it was a stroke, man.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of the Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, man, I gotta hear that. Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.